WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latte from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and let's dig a little more now into the Social Security and Medicare changes that President Obama proposed in his deficit-fighting budget yesterday that has some of his own party mates so inflamed, like Florida Congressman Alan Grayson, who issued a release called President Breaks Promise to Seniors. That's from a Democrat. The politics are that many, especially in the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, are denouncing it as a sellout, even though Republican leaders Boehner and McConnell are rejecting it out of hand as a budget compromise offer in exchange for more tax revenue to help close the deficit from both ends, revenue and cuts. I read it's 2-to-1 cuts to new revenues, but still being rejected. But let's drill down a little deeper on what the president would actually change for Social Security and Medicare. With her take on this is Guardian finance editor Heidi Moore, formerly New York Bureau Chief for the public radio program Marketplace. She has a piece today called Winners and Losers of the Obama Budget. Hi, Heidi.
Hi.
And listeners, we can take your questions and comments, 212-433-WNYC. On the Obama budget released yesterday, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. This chained CPI everyone's talking about to replace the regular consumer price index for determining cost of living increases to Social Security recipients, which they get every year based on the consumer price index. Can you actually do the numbers? What's the big difference here? Let's say I'm a 73-year-old getting $20,000 a year in Social Security. What happens next year under CPI? What happens next year under chained CPI?
Well, with that precise number, I'd probably need to be better at calculations than I really am.
I tried to give you an easy round number.
But you're generally right. You're generally in the right neighborhood. People who get Social Security get very low payments anyway. The idea with chains...
The average, I read, is $14,000 a year.
Yes, it's incredibly low. It's below the poverty level. And that's what we're cutting into, which is a very important social point to make as well. So when we calculate, all of the payments on Social Security go up with inflation, right? So inflation went up 2% last year. So you would expect your Social Security payments to keep up because you're going to be paying more at the supermarket. This new method called chained CPI is based on the consumer price index, which is the measure of inflation. But it says that if you go to the supermarket and the price of beef has gone up, what you should do is go buy some chicken or maybe some vegetables instead. And so it kind of makes a huge psychological jump about what people should be doing with their money. And over time, it can add up to, like $19,000 in lost benefits, for a woman who's, I think, 85 or something.
You mean over a lifetime? Over the remainder of...
Over the remainder of the payments, let's say over, 10, 15 years.
But what, just in percentage terms, before we move on to some other details, do you know? So if inflation last year was 2%, and so Social Security checks would be going up at 2%, under chained CPI, would they likely go up about 1.8%, just 1%? Is it Just a few percentage points less?
It's actually hard to tell because here's the thing about chain CPI. They recalculate it every 6 months and then they re-recalculate it. Uh-huh. So you don't really know what it's going to be at any given point. It's not as predictable as being able to say it's a certain algorithm from the actual inflation number. And so it creates a lot of uncertainty and it just puts less money in people's pockets.
And I read that this pain would be reduced under the Obama budget for people over 75. Did you see that?
Yes. It would be only because they're getting those payments now, and it would be probably disastrous to start, you know, cutting into them. But, you know, we're looking at an aging population that is going to be getting these, you know, payments very shortly. So it's fine for people over 75, their life expectancy is shorter. But if you're somebody who is, you know, like my parents, like, you know, 67, what are they going to do in 3 years?
Would this take effect for people currently on Social Security or only for future recipients?
I believe that it would be future recipients is my understanding.
Yeah. And I think that if what I read is accurate, that even those future recipients, once they reach 75, then the chain CPI reduction would be less. They would be closer to regular CPI because the assumption is that people, once they get that old, have depleted most of their savings and have even higher medical bills. Yeah. And so they go a little easier on them. But that's, you know, again, these details are still coming out. How about the Medicare cuts? The administration seems to say it's only doctors and other providers who would get squeezed. Is that your understanding?
I really don't think that's the case, no. you are seeing, you know, some Medicare cuts to people who are of upper income or who have higher incomes. Medicaid is really being cut. And the idea is that it's going to be cuts to doctors. But really, there's a ripple effect, obviously, when you cut the payments to doctors. It means fewer people are getting services. It makes it harder for, you know, older people who might be going to cancer clinics to get the best care. You're going to feel that. It's not just what the doctors get.
And there's a kind of means test in there as well for people with certain incomes?
Yes, exactly. That's the upper income part. And so they, you know, they look at what your income is. And if they decide it's too much, then you don't get as much Medicare coverage. And the idea is that you can pay for it yourself. You know, Alan Simpson and Bowles are very much in charge of that, are very much in favor of that. But it still takes away from the idea of the social safety net being there for everybody. Right. I mean, everyone paid into Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. And so why would you take the rug out from under them now for any reason?
Well, means testing. I think means testing has a lot of support. We could do a whole separate program on that. But, you know, just like closing loopholes for people who make a lot of money, if you're retired but you still make a lot of money, then maybe you should pay a little bit more for your Medicare premiums. But that's a debate that I guess the country's about to have. Let's get to taxes. He wants more revenue through closing loopholes and limiting tax deductions. How specific does he get?
He gets, I mean, it's pretty specific. I mean, there are a few taxes on the wealthy and on the poor that you have to look at. For the poor, it's the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit that they really, they want to extend those. They want to keep those as part of the budget. That would cost $161 billion. And the idea is that if you look at taxes to taxes, you would then raise taxes on the rich in certain ways. So if you're a hedge fund manager and, you know, you make profit from your investments, or if you have a 401k and you make profit from your investments and you take them out, instead of just paying 15%, you pay, you know, 30%. There's another there are tax deductions that he takes out. You know, if you're wealthy, you can't deduct as much. If you have, you know, a certain retirement account that's over $3 million in value, you don't get as much tax protection. And so it's kind of it's interesting because, you know, we talk about these as if they're numbers, but what it really is a kind of economic rebalancing. But the rebalancing isn't going to work in favor of the poor. It's going to work in favor of the rich because the taxes imposed on them are never going to happen. Republicans are never going to accept them.
Political question from Roy in Kearney. Hi, Roy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just curious about the whole idea about the decision to cave to the situation as Obama seemed to have done. Would that have been the case if this was his first term versus this being his second term?
Well, certainly the politics are different in the first term than the second term. Do you want to do – you're an economics and finance editor. Do you want to do some political analysis?
Yes, because in this case, the politics have really invaded the finance and the economics, very much so. You know, the thing is, Obama won a lot of battles, and it looked like he was actually winning against a lot of Republican opposition for a long time. You know, he got the fiscal cliff resolved. There are a few other things he got done. Healthcare, obviously, Obamacare. But – in this case, it's very clear that Republicans are maintaining the upper hand by just saying no. And it almost has nothing to do with what term Obama is in. It has to do with the fact that the midterm elections are coming up and they have to fight that much harder to hold on to power. They want to win those primaries. They want to win the White House the next time around. So it didn't matter if, you know, this was Obama's first term or his fifth. They were going to give him a hard time because they need to win.
Or maybe he actually believes that there is a long-term deficit problem that really needs to be dealt with, and that it's driven in large measure by entitlements, that with the aging of the population and people living longer than they used to, that Social Security and Medicare aren't sustainable in their current forms, and that it's really a responsible grown-up thing to do to deal with it. And so he's making, you know, cuts that Republicans are calling way too little, and they're rejecting them. But is it necessarily politics or caving, as the caller said, or maybe this is something the president thinks he needs to do?
I think the president really wants to – I think he's thinking about his legacy. You could call that speculation, but, you know, this is his second term. He's been pretty gleeful about it. And, you know, Jack Lew, the Treasury Secretary, put out a statement today, and he said, you know, deficits are important, but what's more important is making sure that we have economic growth. And when you cut – you know, spending, you affect economic growth. You don't let the economy grow as much because you need the government to sort of, you know, put that money into the economy the way that we work right now. So they're very much worried about economic growth, the recovery, unemployment. And while they want to acknowledge the Republicans' worries about austerity, I think it's probably because he wants to come out looking like a good politician at the end of all of this.
Olivia in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Olivia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Two things. First, as far as the chain CPI, what happened to the idea that if they just raise the cap a little on the income that's taxed for Social Security, that that would solve the whole Social Security problem? Why are we attacking it from the bottom, the poor people, instead of fixing it from the top as we've done all along? And it works very well.
And it's a great question. The cap, in other words, for people who don't know, once you make, what is it now, about $110,000?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
After that, your income is not taxed for Social Security. That part of your payroll tax goes away once you make more than about $110,000 in a year. And that's another whole way to raise money, is let that Social Security tax continue to roll up to $200,000 a year, $300,000, or maybe whatever you make.
Yeah.
I guess the argument against that people offer is that Social Security is supposed to be putting your own money away for yourself, in effect. And so once you get taxed on huge amounts of income, then it's not really that kind of savings anymore. Then it's just another tax.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's part of the argument. There's also the political argument, which is that Republicans will prevent anyone with high incomes from being taxed in mm-hmm. any way whatsoever. But, you know, Olivia, that is an excellent question. And a lot of people think that we should be talking about that, because if we pursued that point of view where we raise the payroll tax cap, Social Security would be funded about 85% over the next 75 years. So, yes, that's still kicking it into the future. But who wouldn't buy nearly 3/4 of a century worth of security?
All right. We're almost out of time with Heidi Moore, business and economics editor for Marketplace, old job for The Guardian. Let's just tick off this list in your article today, which is called The Winners and Losers of Obama's Budget. Your winners list: Republicans, Wall Street, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, mental health advocates, students, and trees. So I think we've been through why you think Wall Street and Republicans are on the winner's list. Mental health advocates?
Yeah. So, you know, all the gun control arguments that we've been having have also been about mental health. And a great part of Obama's budget is that he's giving $235 million more to mental health, you know, spotting in schools and help and things like that. So that's a huge win.
So everybody can get on the don't sell a gun to this person list. No, I'm kidding. And students are winners?
Yes, because their student loans would be tagged to the rate, the borrowing rate of the government for 10-year Treasury bonds, which currently is incredibly low. So you wouldn't necessarily have these 10% interest rates people are paying now. You would have, you know, 3% interest, but interest rates are going to rise.
And trees are the winner because Obama's new budget is 16 pages shorter than his old one. That's less wasted paper. Ha! Losers, President Obama, politically, you say, for the reasons we discussed. The unemployed won't convince Republicans to end the sequester, so that hurts unemployment. Anyone who plans to retire, I guess for the reasons that you said. The elderly, similarly. Farmers, asteroids, and Americans, that's a big category, all losers. Okay, why asteroids? Then we're out of time.
$78 million for NASA to lasso an asteroid, so it's galactic hunting season out there.
Heidi Moore, finance and economics editor for The Guardian. Her article today, The Winners and Losers of Obama's Budget. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, don't just dump those scraps of food. We will hear about plans for recycling food waste in New York City. And wait till you hear how much of the waste stream that is. Stay with us.